Blog Talk Radio.
Hello? Can you all hear me? Because we've been having technical difficulties. Hear me. Please send me a text or something. Kim and Shonda, if y'all can hear me, send me something. I apologize, guys. We were, running behind and then having some technical difficulties. I couldn't even stop the music. I do not know what was going on. But anyway, thank you guys for calling in tonight. Welcome to Family Matters with Kenny and Kwajalein. And I am excited about tonight's show. But before we get started, I just want to say something else. So my job is basically remote, and so every week, because we are remote, our director of support, she asks a question so that everyone can answer and, you know, everyone can just get to know each other or whatever. So this week, her question was, what are you grateful for? And I've really pondered whether or not I wanted to answer that question just because of how personal this month is, you know, for me, just what this month means to me. But before I go into why I am grateful, I just wanted to say that sometimes, you know, I know life is hard and we go through hard things and times get tough and everything, but sometimes we really do have to take a step back and just look at the things that we have to be grateful for, the things that are still going well, the things, you know, that God has blessed us with. And sometimes we lose focus because we are on the hard times and we lose focus of the big picture and everything that we have that's going on, that's going good in our lives. So for me, I want to say that I am grateful because this month, 12 years ago, was probably the most traumatic month of my life. And today I can say that, you know, although I still have bad days, but I'm standing here or sitting right now, but I'm here and I'm happy and I'm healthy and I'm, you know, healed. Still not completely healed, but healed much more than I was 12 years ago when we lost our girls. So I just thank God, because I know back then I didn't think that this day would ever come. And, you know, things are not, everything is not going like I want it to go. I'm not where I want to be in life. Everything is not where, you know, where I want it to be. I have struggles. That's why my kids, our kids have been sick every week. This week everybody was in school, thank God. But every week since school has started and, you know, just other things that are going on. However, even in all that, sometimes we just have to really stop and, you know, think on the good things, the things that are good, you know, things that are pure. And so I'm grateful. I'm grateful for where I am today opposed to where I was this, well, not exactly this time, but this month, 12 years ago. So I wanted to say that. But we're going to go ahead and jump into things. So we have a wonderful, wonderful show tonight. We're going to talk about having healthy partnerships between educators and parents / guardians. And tonight we have two of my favorite people that will be our guests. Two of my favorite people, two of my tried and trues, my friends and confidants, and I mean they've just been so much to me. One of them, we've been friends since we were young, high school, and my other friend, we met in Texas. And when I tell you these are strong, loving, I mean, just ambitious, wonderful, God-fearing, God-loving women. It's just, I just could go on and on and on about what, you know, about just who they are and who they've been to me. So let's get started, and I'm going to read our little write-up, and then I'm going to introduce them. School is back in session, and one of the main challenges we sometimes deal with is a disconnect between educators and parents / guardians. How can there be a healthy partnership between educators and parents / guardians? What can parents do to help support their children and the teachers? How will a negative relationship between educators and parents / guardians affect the children? How will a positive relationship between educators and parents / guardians affect the children, family as a whole? So we thank you for joining us tonight as we speak with special guests and longtime educators, Kimberlyn Alford and LaShonda Gilbert. So we thank you, ladies, for being here. Let me unmute your mic. Okay, so Shonda is a Georgia native, proud mother of three beautiful children, ages 20, 13, and 9. She has 20-plus years experience in education, ranging from classroom teacher, teacher of the year, gifted education, building level academic coach, and with over 12 years of service in educational leadership as central office assistant principal and now principal. So, LaShonda, are you there? Kim, can you hear me? Are you there?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. So maybe Shonda. Actually, I'm saying I'm up there. So we're going to go ahead and introduce Kim, and then we're going to come back to Shonda. Okay. So my friend Kim, I've known since Texas. We met in Texas, and she's been she's inspirational, y'all. She has some very good books out there. Anyway, Kim is an author, educator, mother, inspirational speaker, and right now she's serving as the director of an alternative school in Southwest Georgia. So, Kim, we thank you for being here today or tonight.
Thank you for glad to be here, Kwajalein.
And I am looking forward to this conversation. Actually, this this topic was Kim's idea. So Thank you for that. Okay, Shonda says she's here. Shonda, could you try to say something?
Good evening, everyone.
Okay, there she goes. Good evening, Shonda.
Good evening, ladies.
Good evening. Thanks for having me tonight.
Thank you for being here, and sorry about the rough start, but, hey, it's all good. Things happen. Things happen. So let's get into it. Let's go ahead and dive into it. Okay. So what does that look like? What does having a healthy partnership between educators and parents / guardians look like?
To me, it looks like, and first I need to say that I'm doing a disclaimer that I am answering these as LaShonda Walker-Gilbert, parent, even though I have years of educational experience. I do not want to speak for my school district. Just want to make sure I say that. But just wanted to say it looks like healthy and open communication. So those lines should be open both ways. It shouldn't look like the school is waiting for the parent or the parent is waiting for the school to reach out, but it's something that should be a two-way street, so to speak, and it starts with communication. So if you do or don't receive a flyer from the school, if you know that the school year is starting, if you haven't heard from them, you are welcome to call up to the school. Hey, you know, or your a good way too is through email. You know, even if it's to the school principal, if you don't know who, you know, your child's teacher is, but just letting the school know that, you know, you're a willing partner, that helps as well. But the school likes to hear from you when it's something positive and or a concern.
So don't wait around in communication.
Go ahead. I would like to agree with what Shonda stated. All of that is true. I think healthy communication is best considered teamwork. I think it's important when parents and school members consider themselves on the same team, working or advocating for each and every individual student. And I think that if we could consider ourselves on the same team, working together, then everyone needs to know the plays, so to speak. So that means, you know, what's the game? Who's going to participate in that? You know, who are the players? And then what's the play?
Mm-hmm.
I think that that best serves the student, and it also best serves the community as a whole.
So when you say we need to know the play, so, and that comes in the form of communication. So would you say that that would be what constant emailing, parent-teacher conferences?
I would say that all of those things are important, Kwajalein. Yes, you need to have, and it doesn't have to be constant, but there has to be an open line of communication, meaning when I'm not sure what's happening or what needs to happen or when I would like something different to happen, I need to have a way to communicate that and not just make it a wish. For example, if I have a child that comes home and complains to me that they're being bullied, I need to understand and know, who is it that I need to contact? What information do I need to provide for them? And then I need to be confident that that's going to be addressed. And that only can be established by regular communication and really relationship building. So there has to be a relationship between parents and school and the school. And the school exists of many entities. So it's not just the principal, the teacher, but it could be the counselor, the nurse, whoever is a part of that system that needs to provide that support. So the lines of communication need to be open all the way around, tapping into that when the time is needed. The same is true for the school system in the other direction. When something is going on that needs to be called to the attention, they need to, you know, be comfortable in opening those communication lines and, you know, giving that information to the parent or guardian.
And so, you know, just to add to that, you know, while I might be, you know, an educator, I'm also a working parent. So my communication might look different for someone else. So I might not be able to make it to every parent night, or I might be late some of those parent nights because I might have parent night at my school. However, I'm able to send an email, or if the teacher is saying, hey, we need volunteers for materials or things. So, I mean, the communication can look different, you being able to help, but it's just having that active engagement in your child's learning. So it doesn't mean you have to come up there and eat lunch with your child, or you have to be at every single thing, but you know, you could sign up to be on the PTA or PTO. They have school council. So it's just a lot of different roles that can be played that can kind of help in that partnership.
Got it. So I want to ask this question, and then I do want to go back actually to the topic of bullying after I ask this.
Okay.
So you ladies told us what it looks like. But why is it important? Why is it important? Because, I mean, I think I know, but you have some parents out there that really don't think that it's important. I send my kids to school. You do your job. You know, this is your job to teach them. I don't need to talk to you, whatever, you know, because that is the attitude that some people have. So why would you say that this is important? It's imperative for, you know, educators and parents to come together and have a partnership when it comes to our children.
It's important because we're partnering to create a productive citizen in society. And so while everyone is entitled to their own opinions, their beliefs, children tend to mimic what they hear and what they see. And so if education doesn't seem like it's important at home, a lot of times it's hard for them to switch over to that when they're in the classroom or in the school setting. The things that they're able to do at home might not be appropriate for the school. And so if we can support each other, that gives the child a better understanding of how the world works as a whole. And also it gives the parent and the student a sense of belonging in the school setting and in the world at large. So, you know, if you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, sense of, like, you got to get your basic needs and everything done, but then everybody wants to feel like they are a part of something. And if that disconnect is there from the home front towards the school, then that kind of bleeds into the school setting, which makes it a little bit harder for that child to feel comfortable and to accept the accountability that is being placed on the student to be an active learner and to have that engagement with their peers.
That's good. Kim, do you have anything to add to that?
Quadrant, I missed the question. The question about, I can only guess from what I heard from Shonda. I heard her response, but I did not hear your question.
Okay. I was saying, why is it important? Why is it important for us to have that partnership? Because some parents, you know, they don't
think that it is. Some parents may have the attitude that, you know, I send them to school, you teach them, you do your job, and that's it. I don't have a reason to, you know, have any communication with you or whatever. So why is it important?
Absolutely, it's essential. In our day and age, in our feeling, it's too much for the educators to do it all. Taking care of our kids in an age where there's technology that's readily available, and I'll even speak to one of the things that's really an issue nowadays is vaping. And we're seeing that in school systems with students in middle school even. When those kinds of problems arise and we're trying to protect students, it requires everybody, all hands on deck. Parents need to be aware of what need to be aware. School officials need to be aware, so parents provide that. Parents need to be in the school so that together we can ensure that our
Your phone is going out. Hello? Okay. Shonda, are you still there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
I hear you. Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
So Kwajalein, I know your next topic that you wanted to address is bullying. And so one of the first things that I would suggest that families do is have an understanding of what that definition of bullying looks like. Bullying, it typically means that you have a group of people that are consistently targeting another person repeatedly. So that's one thing. Like a lot of times people will come and they'll say, well, I don't play that bullying stuff. This is happening, you know, to my kid. But a lot of times the school might not even know. Many schools have like a bullying hotline. We have like an electronic platform. We have like a QR code where families can do it anonymously and then it gets to us and we can offer support. But the main thing is understanding the definition of bullying. And then secondly, finding out if your child was able to communicate what's been happening to an adult in the building. And in my notes, I kind of wrote the importance of making sure, I want to make sure I'm saying it exactly correctly. Explain to know what bullying looks like. Teach your child to speak out if they see it or if it happens to them. Encourage your child to have at least one adult in the building they can talk to. It can be a former teacher. It can be the counselor. It can be an administrator, a custodian, a nutrition staff member, a support staff. So it doesn't just have to be the classroom teacher. You know, sometimes every relationship doesn't gel, but, you know, you usually have one person in the building that could kind of reach out to a kid. But what we've noticed is that it's happening, but they didn't really communicate it to the teacher, or it was like days lapsed or passed. So those would just be some, you know, some tips.
So, okay, well, that's a good tip because the first thing you think about is going to the teacher. You don't really – I've never thought about, you know, telling my kids to go to someone, you know, in the cafeteria or the library. And I've never thought about that. I have
and
seen –
And I just wanted to say that because
–
so at school cultures are different, but they see nutrition worker every day. They're giving them their lunch code or hot, you know, so –
they can form bonds with other people. So that was kind of why I was saying that, like, the head custodian at our school, he's a big part of, like, mentoring boys as well as girls. So, you know, every school has a different dynamic, but most people that are in a school building are there to help. And so while they can tell their teacher if they don't feel comfortable, especially at the beginning of the year, they might want to tell their teacher from last year. Or they might have had a relationship with the counselor. So that's why I was saying it doesn't just have to be the classroom teacher that they're telling. It's important for them to tell the teacher, but if they don't feel comfortable, they do need to feel comfortable speaking up
to someone. Now, I think that's a wonderful point because I know, like I said, I never thought about it, and I'm sure some of our listeners probably never thought about that because the first thing you think is going to the teacher and then going to the you know, assistant principal or the principal. So I think that, yeah, I think that's a great, great point that you brought up. I know I've heard, seen, read, heard from parents that feel as though the school does nothing about bullying. So that in itself, I believe, causes a disconnect between educators and parents / guardians.
Right.
They feel like
Go ahead. So public education is free. So everybody has a right to public education. So, you know, just like if somebody did something, you know, at Walmart and they, you know, they told them, it's like, you know, when they get caught, you know what I'm saying, that's when the justice can be served. But in a school setting, everybody has a right to a free education. So just because it happened right then doesn't mean that that child is going to be immediately sent far off, so to speak. But at the same time, we also have to do some type of restorative practices with that child. Not that it's endangering anyone else's child. And also, I'm not privy to tell you what's going to happen to the other child, you know? And so that a lot of times I think what people are frustrated about and it's like, well, you know, my child told me that he saw Rico in the hall or what, you know, though it's just, it's sensitive information. We do address it, but it's not like you had a car wreck and then immediately that person was put in handcuffs because they were drunk driving. It's not that impactful. There's also an investigation piece. Sometimes a lot of this bullying comes from social media. And so we have to do due diligence about finding out about it. Okay, well, you said he texted you on Instagram. Where is the post? Did you screenshot it? Well, I deleted that. So we really have to do investigative work to find out about it. We question their peers to kind of see if it's one of those type situations. And it's not that we don't believe them, but we want to have all the facts and we want to make sure that we're getting the appropriate support for both parties. So I can't give you the other parent's phone number, you know, but if you know that other parent, that's something that y'all can do. Some of those things can't be facilitated at the schoolhouse, but the things that we can do at the school, we do. The school counselor can set up individual group counseling, like I talked about restorative practices, where you have those two individuals trying to work out what is causing this incident to happen or repeatedly to happen. You know, so a lot of districts receive ARP funding that will address social-emotional needs, and that's where a lot of this is stemming from. And while the school counselor can't dig that deep, we are able to give resources to parents or share resources with parents from the community that can let that child seek additional support outside of the school. Does that make sense? So it's big, but we can't take it all on. You know what I'm saying? Our job is to keep your child safe. That part we own, and to try and get support for both students, but at the same time, we don't know what trauma has happened to that child before then. So our main priority is to keep both parties safe, all students safe.
Yeah, and I think
I can't tell you what is going to happen to the other child. And I know that's frustrating, but that's just like if you go to the emergency room, and even though you're my close friend, you might not want me to know why you went to the emergency room. So I can't go to the nurse and say, oh, and what happened to her? Or why is she in that room? You know, so, or that kind of triage. So, you know, it's confidential information as well.
Right. Kim is back. Kim, we're talking, okay. we just went into the topic of bullying. Shonda explained to us what bullying is, and then I was just, you know, I asked her something about, you know, because there are a lot of parents that feel as though, you know, they're not getting any results from the school when it comes to their children being bullied, and so that's kind of where, you know, all of that was going. This Shonda was educating us, and I think you said something that's very important for us to keep in mind as parents is your job is to keep both parties safe, because honestly, when you know when your child is a target of bullying, you're not really thinking about the other child. You're thinking about your child. And but you guys have to look at it from, you know, both. You have to look at both children, or all children involved, whatever that looks like. So that's something to remember. And like you said, you don't have permission to tell what happened to the other person, because a lot of time parents do want to know, and sometimes that will cause, you know, a rift between the parents and the educators, because it's like, okay, you know, some parents feel like, well, you can't tell me what happened to them. You're not trying to keep my child safe. You're not doing this and you're not doing that. Mm-hmm. And that's how, you know, parents feel sometimes when they don't know what happened to the other child that was harming their child or children.
And,
Kim,
you know,
do you have anything? Go ahead, Shonda.
No, I was just going to say that's why it's important with that line of communication and having that open communication, you know, speaking to the parents when you see them in carpool line, you know, that relationship, so that when things like this come up, you can have that level of trust. Like, I don't know what is going to happen, but I trust that you're going to take care of it.
Mm-hmm. And you may, and also, too, before I turn it over to Kim, for anybody listening, keep them, you know, go back to what she said about when the child comes and says, when your child may go and say, well, they sent me a text or whatever, because I know Snapchat is a big thing, and I don't know if that's TikTok. Well, I don't know. I think Snapchat is one. I don't know. But anyway, you know, but making sure that you have evidence, you have screenshots of these conversations and the entire conversation, not, you know, not just one-sided, not being one-sided. No, Kim, I can't say something, and I'll tell you if I can hear you say something now. We can hear you, but you're still going out. We can hear you.
Okay. I'll try to move to another look. I live in the country.
Okay. So do I. So I know you're saying.
Okay. I was agreeing with the conversation. Information. I know that can be really frustrating when something traumatic has happened to a child and you want to know the details, but it does go back to, and I think someone said that, the relationship building. You have a relationship with the parent. The parent has a relationship with the school employees. That those, when there's a time required,
You're still going out, Kim. Did you hear me?
And so while Kim is adjusting her volume, you know, that's just that bottom foundational layer is communication. And that's why we were saying at the beginning, that's one of the most important things, because if you have that, it just helps the relationship or the partnership go a lot smoother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And I think it's important for us to get that. It is. I know for me, I try to, I do try as a parent of four, I try to build some type of, you know, communication with my kids' teachers. Honestly, I probably don't do it as much with Jeremiah being in high school, but then he's more, I don't know. But anyway.
But email can go a long way. Like, I can come at open house. You know, I can come to some parent nights. So, like I said, we're having it. But it's like, hey, we're the Gilberts. We're a proactive family. You know, our child's education is important. If you have any concerns about our child, please feel free to reach out to us. Here's our contact information. While you have a database, I can easily put in Quadlin Johnson in my email feed and say, oh, Ms. Johnson gave me her number right here. I can get to it quick, you know. But it's just like, oh, well, now I know your mama doesn't play. I know your parents want to have you in this school to learn, you know. So it's just those kind of things. And not saying all parents aren't that way, but some parents might can come and show their face every day. So, you know, I'm just saying communication can look different, but it's going to be really important throughout the educational journey of your child, no matter what grade level. Pre-K, we get a lot of involvement, kindergarten, first, second, and then it kind of starts drifting, especially by middle and high school. But those educators want to communicate with parents also.
All right, so we need the same, maybe not as much, but still communicate. Mm-hmm. And I do. I go to open house. I introduce myself, you know, things like that. It's just not as much as it was when he was younger. Like, I don't talk to teachers as much. And there are some things that, you know, I try to let him handle. Let's say if he's been out and he says, well, okay, when he was out with COVID, he said that one of his teachers was not allowing him to make up his work. And so I was about to email her. And he said he wanted to talk to her. And so I said, okay, well, you talk to her. And then if you do not get a response, then I will address it. But whatever he did,
right,
because she did go back in and give him the opportunity to make it up.
And that would be appropriate, but I wouldn't necessarily say for you to do that, you know, for Mariah or Jared, depending on what it is, you know, or Joel, because that communication might not be there, or the teacher might think that they're trying to be forceful or something. But, you know, so I think we should look at the age level of what you're asking, just like a Wednesday folder, a time paper folder. You know, after a certain grade level, the teachers don't walk around and go in everybody's backpack and say, turn in your Wednesday, you know, so you have to tell your kid, like, hey, don't forget, you got your Wednesday folder, turn it in, make sure you turn it in. So that's what I'm saying, it's like a partnership. But this is your blog, but I did want to make sure that it was two questions that we kind of talked about before that I wanted to kind of address before our time ran out, if that would be okay with you.
Of course. I told you to go ahead and do your thing, girl. Go
go ahead.
I know.
And Kim disconnected again, so I think, I'm sure she'll probably try to call back in, but go ahead. We're listening. I'm here for all the good information.
Okay. So, everything we talked about actually is good, but I just, you know, want parents to understand that, you know, you're your child's best advocate, and if it's an emotional topic, you should try to bring either your phone with your notes on it or either a notepad, whatever you're comfortable with, so that you can stay focused with what you want to talk about. Does that make sense? So say if you're upset about bullying, but while y'all are talking, then the grades come up. You know, it's like the trajectory of the conversation can go so many different ways. So it's good for you to have your pointers already down so that you can make sure that you're discussing what you want to talk about, because everybody's time is valuable and it's important, but you don't want to have to just keep coming back and coming back. And then, you know, again, you are your child's biggest advocate. So I always want parents to feel comfortable and know that they're empowered to, you're empowered to information, but you're also empowered to know information. So, you know, look on your child's school website or, you know, the web page. You know, if they have an active teacher page, you know, see what's happening at the school, even if you don't know. So when they're coming home with homework, you know, you could say, you guys are working on fractions or, you know, or whatever it is, you know, be in tune with what they're learning. Not saying that you have to reteach them, but that'll let your child know, too, that you're in this partnership, you're all in. And that way, if you feel like your child isn't performing well, you can say, well, I noticed these past few weeks, you guys are working on multiplication, and now you're on division, and he never did come home with a great grade in multiplication. What resources do you have at the school that can help my child? You know, what type of remediation or intervention has been done for my child in order for them to show mastery in the standard? So it works both ways. Mm-hmm. You don't want to just receive grades that aren't passing and just, you know, keep saying, well, why aren't you doing it? Why aren't you doing it? Like, that's also an opportunity for you to open up and to share that concern with the teacher. But try not to wait until it's the report card, because by the time it's the report card, it can be too late. Does that make sense? Like, if your student has been making low grades, low grades, low grades, and now you had a report card, it's not really that much the teacher can do to impact that report card grading period. But if you go ahead and ask during the interim, you can get that additional support. If I hope, does that sound clear?
It does, but I want to say, I want to ask one thing about that to you ladies. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what about situations where, because it does go both ways, but there are situations sometimes where, okay, parents are frustrated because they're like, I haven't heard back. I haven't heard from the teacher until the last minute. I didn't even know my kid was failing. And so then educators are like, well, you know, you have power school or whatever, but sometimes the grades are not, you know, they're not up to date or they're not in there. So
that's when you reach out to the administrator. Like, you can put both of them on the email. You know, if you've given the educator an opportunity. Well, I'm saying you've given the educator an opportunity to respond. They had not yet, so then you would go to the next level. And so you'll say, I noticed that, you know, I sent an email on blah, blah, blah. I didn't get a response. My goal is for my child to show mastery of standards. Please let me know where we are with the reassessment of blah, blah, blah. So now the principal is in the loop, but if you just come up there and like, I need to make an appointment, you know, I like give them a chance to work on it. But if they don't know that the problem exists, you know, they can't really address it. But if you've given, give the educator the opportunity, but then if you aren't seeing anything, like our like we usually have 24, 48 hours that we should be responding to parents. And if not, then that means that something is wrong. Now, in high school, that might look a little bit different, but they still have someone that can say, hey, a parent is reaching out. Are you able to communicate? So in our district, we have what's called Remind. So I can go in and look at the log and see if the parents have been contacting. I can see if the parent is reading the Remind. I can print out the dialogue. And so that's usually what I kind of encourage the parents and the teachers to do, because it's documentation for both of them. But I would not encourage either party to use their personal devices to do that.
To use text,
but
to do like texting?
I would not, especially on the educator side, I wouldn't, because that's their personal, like the district is not paying for that. Now, some teachers are nice enough and they would do it, but email is the district. So reach out via email. Like that's keeping it professional.
Yeah, I've had a couple of teachers to give us their number for text, but then I'm not that type of parent that wants to, you know, be texting you at 2 o'clock in the morning, going off or whatever,
right.
You know. So it would
and
only
some
be
people do Google Voice.
That's the thing. Yeah, some people go, but I agree. I definitely agree with keeping it professional. I agree with that. And email works just fine. And even, you know, speaking of that, I think, too, as parents, we have to remember that educators have lives. They have families. And, you know, when I went to open house for Jared and Mariah this past year, both of their teachers were like, you know, well, if you send me an email, I'm, you know, I'll answer. I'm up to like 10 o'clock. And my thing is, if I send you an email at 10 o'clock, it's only because I'm thinking about it. I don't expect you to respond to me at 10 o'clock.
Right.
Because I understand you have your own life. You have your own family. You know, you being an educator is a job, but you have other things outside. You know, you have your family. That's priority. That's priority.
Yes.
And so I might think about it at 10 o'clock and say, oh, let me, you know, send this email or whatever, because I've got my kids down and I'm winding down or whatever. But I don't, me personally, I don't expect that. I expect you to respond to me within business hours.
Indeed.
So that's right. Just how I feel about that. Kim, are you there? Can you hear?
Hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay. In terms of communication, I'm actually driving around trying to get a good signal. In terms communication, and getting to know things, oftentimes parents may be guilty of not staying informed. We do have lots of technology that can be used for the good, and everything that Shonda described, using the Remind app for communication, does serve as good documentation, but it's nothing that hurts a phone call. A phone call does not hurt at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, we go back to, you know, writing notes. Anything that works for you to get communication to the educator. And, you know your child best, so you know if they're going to arrive at school with that or not. But using all means of communication, I think, is in order to assure that the lines of communication are open. It is the responsibility of educators grades in a timely manner, and if that is not, I think, a little nudge to say, even just to say, I've been checking grades, are there any outstanding grades that I should be aware of as that time, you know, is approaching? Let them know that you're paying attention to what is happening in the grade book with your child. That feedback a little faster. I've even, being in the classroom, had parents to say, you guys had a test on Friday, it's Monday. When will those grades be published? I'm eager to see how Billy did because we studied together. You know, those kind of things, urging to the educator, and I'm just speaking from my experience as a classroom teacher, to know that the parents have the time to study with that child, to know that we're in a partnership, you know. I sent that note, you that seriously and invested in you know, the end result was. So I think that communication can clear up a lot of those misunderstandings. Now, is there wrong on both sides? Absolutely. We're all human. But a lot of times communication can resolve some of those issues.
Got it. So the main takeaway still goes back to communication. Yeah, I mean, that's communication. Okay, so let me ask you this, because so if I were to say that, well, we studied together, you guys took a test on Friday, and I'm asking you on Monday, when are you going to put it in? How do you guys feel about that? I mean, are you do you think it's too soon, or like I just had a weekend, can I have my weekend or what? I mean, does that bother you all at all?
It depends on, like, in lower grades, like in elementary school, teachers are supposed to post weekly. So it might not be the next day, but it should be within a week time frame. In middle and high school, most teachers have a syllabus. And so I would encourage the parents to look at that syllabus or syllabi and see what the teacher says about their grading policies. And that way you'll know, you know, when you should be expecting it, if that makes sense.
If you're showing that you're invested in it, that you you made an investment and you're trying to see how that, you know, went about, you might be planning on making adjustments at home based on that. So let's say, for instance, Billy did great on that assessment. And so now you've determined that, okay, I'm going to study with all of his tests because he made a 80 on that test and he's been making 60. So I think that the feedback is just as important to the parent if we're working as a team as it is for that student wanting that grade. That promotes the teamwork. And it just goes back to relationship building. Not saying that every time I got a note from a parent I was excited about it, but I respected it. I understood, and I tried to either post that grade or give a response. This particular assignment had several essays. I will have those grades posted by Thursday. Does that make sense?
That's good. And it does. And I think that's something else too. You know, it's important for us not to ignore each other. The parent should not ignore the teacher, and the teacher or educator should not ignore the parent or the guardian, because sometimes that happens as well. Sometimes things are overlooked, and sometimes people just don't respond. And, you know, so I think that's important too. That's important with that relationship building. So let me ask you, you ladies, this COVID-19. How has COVID-19 impacted things in the schools now, or has it? Have you guys noticed a big change? And if so, what advice would you give to us as parents to help navigate through that?
Tim, I was going to let you go, and then I can piggyback off for you. Will that work?
Yes, that'll work. I think COVID-19 definitely had an impact on school. It's really not totally seen at this point. We know the adjustments that we made in terms of distance learning, we learned that it could be done. Educators cared, also got the experience of knowing, you know, what's really happening with their students, so they have more of a understanding of that. But greatest thing that we hear talk about is the learning loss. And so at this point in time, we're trying to play catch. And what do I mean by that? We can look at learning loss from the standpoint of students as a whole, but I think the most challenging part of the learning loss is for these students that will be graduating in the next couple of years. The time that we have to try to get them back into routine, because a part of what we're doing as educators is teaching our kids work ethic, and the work ethic definitely enough. And so we have a limited amount of time to work with our students who are sophomores, juniors, and seniors to instill in them the importance of having a good work ethic, the importance of being able to study, because some of them are going off to college, and those are skills that we were hoping to build, and we lost 3 years of being able to work on those consistently, on a consistent basis. So I do think COVID-19 has uncovered a lot of those challenges, but it's also brought to light how we can make adjustments and meet the needs of students, and some of those things have carried on. Virtual learning, I think, has gotten traction, and in some way or form, that has become a part of what we do in education. It's also maybe even helped out to bring some resources to light that can be used for students who are hospital homebound, maybe things that were not as used as often. We can meet some of those needs for students and families.
Yes, Kim, those were some very important and good pointers and tips to share. And I would, you know, also like to highlight, especially on the primary grade level, we do have that learning loss, what we're trying to address, but so many different innovative ways of teaching students and how we can understand if they've mastered what's been presented to them has come from us going through COVID-19. So, like, we have one-to-one devices. So all our pre-K through first graders have iPads. All our second through fifth graders have their own laptops. So, you know, teachers are able to assign things in different ways that they weren't able to do before. So it's not just, you know, pencil and paper, which I think is important as we're moving, you know, more and more into this 21st. And also it's allowing students to have an opportunity to take ownership and accountability. We call it personalized learning or student voice and choice. So, you know, the teacher is giving that effective feedback to the student. You know, what's your learning goal for reading this year? I want to meet my AR goal every 9 weeks or every 12 weeks or, you know, whatever it is. And that could look like how it should, K through 12. But talking to them about their progress and helping them set goals so that they can meet those goals is going to be important and help with that ownership.
That's good. I want to ask something because you know you were talking about reading, so I have two things that came to mind. What would you all say to maybe parents or guardians or, you know, families that are listening that do not understand, you know, the importance of helping or finding someone to help your, you know, the students with reading? Why is that important? You know, because I know ever since my kids have been in school is read to them, Have them to read 20 minutes a day, even if they don't do anything else during the summer. Make sure they read. Why is that important?
So,
Shonda then Kim.
Okay. So vocabulary is important. There's this research that, you know, basically talked about how much you communicate to your child and the way you communicate to them. So if a child doesn't have books in the home and then no one's talking to the child, then that means that this big sponge that they have with their brain, it's not receiving that much. And so that means when they go to school, they'll end up having to catch up. So it's important to expose your child to literature. It doesn't have to be, it could be a book from the public library. It could be a newspaper. Even letting your child see you read, that's important. That saying that reading is important, it's something that needs to be a part of your life. Speaking to your child and complete sentences helps them with their thought development when it's time for them to write. So it helps their vocabulary grow. So when it's time for them to learn these sight words and different things like that, they'll have what you call like a schema, you know, something that they can use as their background to help them spring forward. But even if your child doesn't come to school with those things, if the teacher is sending home sight words and things of that nature, it means that your child might need just a little bit more support. And so that means that they can't get it all in the instructional day. And so partnering with them will help your child to be more successful. Your child should be learning to read in kindergarten through first grade. Second grade, they're building them up a little bit more, but by third grade, they're reading to answer questions, to get specific things done from the text. So if your child is struggling in third grade with reading, it's going to be a long road for them fourth all the way up to 12th grade unless those foundational skills are met. So it doesn't mean that it's hopeless, but that's kind of that third grade, the pipeline thing that people talk about, and that's just where a lot of people do their research, is where they're looking at how your kid is performing as a third grader. I'm not saying it means that they won't outperform or no one's putting labels on kids, but that foundational piece is going to be important because the word and the work is just going to get harder and harder. And so if you can give them that strong foundation of knowing their sight words, knowing their letter sounds, knowing the alphabet and the sounds and not saying A, B, C, D, like that's not knowing the alphabet. They have to actually be able to recognize the letters. And they can do that when you're riding in the car. Like, oh, I see McDonald's. What letters do you see in that word that you know? You know, so just different things like that. Like you can make it fun and engaging, you know, in your household, but it's going to be important to keep them as strong learners for life.
Em, do you have anything to add to that?
I just like to add my experience is mainly in secondary education. And so I usually encounter the students after they have passed those formative years of learning. And my field was science when I was in the classroom. And science really is almost like learning a new language. The reason that I say that is because a lot of the terms in science have a totally different meaning outside of the science classroom. Words that mean one thing mean something different. And so if your student has not learned to read well and to code, then it's almost, well, it is like them trying to not only read, but read another language. And it just poses so many challenges for them. Reading is essential. I had a child, my son, who was, I say late learning to read. He learned in the summer of his second grade year to read well and to code. So from that, before that, and up until that, he memorized things, and he was of sight words and so forth. But the reading skills were not there. Fast forward to him as a high school student, as an adult, because we spent the time that was required with him to help him develop those skills, he was able to do what he needed to do through high school and beyond. Once we took that extra step, and in his case, it was retaining him in second grade so that he could sharpen those skills, even though he knew how to read, he needed to have the practice and so forth. We did not have an issue with him as it relates to his ability to read in the classroom. And a lot of times people shy away from retention, even though they are advised of that, that there's a need, that the student is so far behind that they need that extra time. As a parent, it was one of the hardest decisions that I made for my child, but it was absolutely the best decision that I made for my child. Being able to read is just essential to doing everything in life. When we think about ourselves as adults, if you purchase a home, you need to be able to read the contract. You need to be able to read those finer details, and you need to have a good understanding of what's being presented to you. Any kind of contract, a car, I mean, purchasing a car, they're going to have some, you know, some finer details there. And if you cannot read well, then often you'll be taken advantage of, and things will be overlooked. So starting young, investing the time, doing what needs to be done to ensure that students have those skills is essential.
That's good. Yeah, you ladies have given them a lot of good, great information. Kim, going back to you, you know, you making the decision to retain your son, what would you say to listeners, if we have any listeners that may be struggling with that right now? You know, they may see that, well, maybe not right now because we're still at the beginning, but, you know, if it happens to come up where they see that their child is struggling, but they still are caught in between, you know, wanting them to go ahead and you know, pass to be with their, you know, their friends, or, you know, they just don't know, should they retain them? Should they go ahead and allow them to move forward? What advice would you give as a parent to someone that may struggle with that?
Well, this was a decision. We often joke about our son, our first child, being an experiment. And so I was a very young parent. My son is actually 32 now, so that kind of lets you know that was a long, long time ago. But I would credit that decision to the partnership between me as a parent with the educator that was providing the service. My son attended summer school at a school different from his primary school. And the educator that was there, I wish I could remember her name. She was an older lady, and just a wonderful educator. I can't say anything more. And she coached us through the process. We had confidence as much as we could in an individual. Prayer for us played a vital role, but we were able to talk to that educator, and she showed us the progress that our son had made under her care in that short amount of time. Summer school was maybe 3 weeks, and then encouraged us that if we would place our son in her school, and she would ensure that he was placed in her class. And I can't say enough. I so wish I could remember her name, because I would shout it out every time. But I can't say enough about that partnership. She kept her word. I think that year my son read like 200 books He engaged parents. His father at the time worked the night shift, so he worked from 11 to 7 in the morning. But he would come in after work and read to the kids. It was an engaging, a great partnership. It was a chance. We were taking literally. I cried. My son cried. And Dad in front of us, but I'm sure he wanted to cry as we made that decision. I can remember the words that my son said to me, "Why are y'all doing this to me?" That hurt me so bad. But it was the best thing that we could have done for him is to ensure that he was a good reader. I can't say enough about the value of the partnership, of being able to trust those who are entrusted with your child's education, and that simply comes from getting to know them. We cannot sit on the outside and just consider it, you know, you take them, here they go. It is a partnership. Raising a child is a responsibility, and a part of that responsibility is ensuring they're educated and they have an opportunity to work with the people who are doing the educating. And so that was something that I learned early. I was not an educator at the time. This was before I became an educator. And it was definitely a scary, scary thing. But because of that partnership, because of that trust that we had established with that, I will say that if you allow me to have him for this year, you will never have a problem with him reading again. And she was absolutely correct. He read every book that we would give him. At the time, I didn't care what he was reading. So he was reading. I just wanted him to read. And he read all of the Harry Potter books. And they were not little books. And he has excellent recall. And I'm so proud of that, and I know I'm going on long, but even a couple of weeks ago, he came down, maybe like a month ago, he came down to visit me for my birthday, and he had a book that he was reading, and I asked him, you know, book, but he didn't understand while I was asking that, but I was so tickled that, you know, my son, who's 32, was reading after all this time.
That's wonderful. You trusted her. You trusted yourself. You know, and sometimes it is hard when we're raising kids. We don't know. Sometimes we get into situations and we don't know what the right answer is, or we know, but we're reluctant, you know. But look, that was great. You trusted her. She was definitely a blessing. And, your kids are wonderful. And I love your kids. They're wonderful. So thank you. Thank you for, sharing that, because that's important because we have a lot of people that struggle with that. I have another question. Look, I'm going to have to ask you ladies to come back because, we're not going to get to everything. So, I mean, I could ask y'all online or I could ask y'all offline. I'll be willing to come back.
Oh yeah,
but this we're, thank you. Since we're talking about that, how can we work together to address learning disabilities? I also have behavior issues on the question, but we'll discuss that separately in the next time. So, how can we come together to address learning disabilities when it comes to, you know, to our children? What should the parents be looking for when it comes to education? If they have a child that's in school and they notice that they are having issues, what should be happening with that child in school, and what can the parent do at home?
Uh,
I feel like that was loaded, Quadrant.
Sorry.
was loaded. So, you know, first you have to get rid of some systemic thinking when it comes to support and help from the school. Like, it's not a us and them. The teamwork piece has to be there. And, you know, we just only want to help children to be better learners. So if someone's saying that they noticed something or you noticed something, you have the right to tell the school. So if you notice that your child is not progressing like you would like to, talk to the teacher, like set up a parent conference. And then if you notice that they still aren't making progress, we have something in Georgia that's called the RTI process, response to intervention. So everyone's on tier one. You know, you want to make sure you're getting that solid foundation. Then tier two, you know, they're getting that 20-minute extra support, so to speak. Then you have tier three, you know, so and at one point we did have tier four. But so there are different support structures within the school that can help. Most schools in Georgia have something called EIP, which is Early Intervention Program, that can help with reading skills. So that means that a teacher might push into the classroom to help your child, or they might pull out to help your child throughout the instructional day. And then if those things aren't working, then you also have what's called special education, or if you want your child to be tested for what's called an IEP, individualized education plan. And so, you know, so there are different things that can happen for your child at different levels, but, you know, it will be important for you to get with the classroom teacher to see, you know, where your child is performing and if there are any gaps that should be addressed, and then to get a plan of action in place. Some students have already take medicines, you know, that maybe they started the school with, and so they might have a 504 plan, and that plan might allow them to have extended time when they're taking a test. So, you know, they may have trouble focusing, but that plan can give them that extra 30 minutes that they might need. And that's something that will be a legal document that can carry throughout the educational journey. You will meet on all of these things periodically throughout the school year. And so they can be in it or out, just depending on the way that they perform. But, again, one of the main pieces is going to be for that communication to happen.
Got it. To communicate and educate parents, to educate us, so because some parents might not know about IEP and 504 and things like that. So we need to be educated on those things and what, you know, our kids are entitled.
But it can be simple language. You could just say, my son is not performing like how I think he should. I think he needs some help. Like, what can we do to make sure that he's going to pass or, you know, perform better? It doesn't have to be those acronyms, you know, like that we use in these three-letter terms that we have. It doesn't have to be something so complex, but you could just say, I need help for my child.
Okay.
I think that it's important for you to know that you are an expert and to not feel like you're at the like the school is totally in charge of everything. But you're an expert on your child. And so if you are working with your child and you notice that it's taking them 2 or 3 minutes to do a simple math problem, or you are working with your child and you notice that it's taking them an extreme amount of time to read a passage, and when they finish reading the passage, they can't tell you what they've read. All of those are tangible things that you can share with your child's counselor, your child's teacher. All of those are tangible things that you can share with them to request some additional help or additional guidance. Those are all things that need to be addressed. And so if you can speak to how is this being addressed, or I noticed this
Have you noticed it? You know, if you're talking to the classroom mm-hmm. teacher, have you noticed that? What can we do to improve that? Going back to that partnership, saying what you noticed and asking them, you know, have they noticed the same things? And is there some way that that can be addressed? I'm concerned that that's going to affect them as they get older. Is there something that we can do now to address that? I think that that is very important. When we talk about everyone, their role, and everyone being a player, that play or the role that the parent holds team. The parent is the expert about that particular child. Teachers in general are experts about what they are trying to share with the students and how students typically learn, but you become the expert on your child. And if you embrace that and share the information, I think that you'll get better results. And there's always something in place for if I do this and it doesn't happen, then there's a next step. There's always a next step. Don't get caught up in being upset because you didn't get the response that you wanted. When you move to the next step, so say, for instance, you share something with a classroom teacher, you don't get any kind of response, and you want to go to the counselor, you want to make sure that you share everything that you shared up to date with the classroom teacher and the question that you want answered or the solution that you want resolved. It's not that I'm telling on the classroom teacher. I'm just saying I have this problem. I've been trying to get it addressed or get some guidance. Can you assist me?
Okay, that's good to know. That's good information to know. That is good to know. Well, I have more questions, but we're gonna we will address those. We'll address those next time. But you ladies have given a lot of great information, because sometimes we just don't know what to do or how to go about, you know, reaching out or, you know, expressing that, okay, I see this with my child. Or, you know, some people don't know how to do that. So you all have really given us some great information on tonight. Kyra. Hello, Kyra.
Hello. Hey, everybody.
How are you?
Hello. I'm good. How are you? Caught me off guard. Okay.
Before we end, did you have anything that you wanted to add or questions or anything before we end tonight?
No, I came in just a few minutes ago as I was – I had to come in a little later. I think there were two teachers on here tonight mm-hmm. who the information you guys were you ladies gave was just amazing. My daughter had a 504 plan. She is 20 years old now. She graduated high school. And then I have a son who is in 11th grade who is autistic, who has an IEP. And he mm-hmm. was not diagnosed with autism until he was 11. And it was a struggle to get that diagnosis because he is very high functioning. However, I knew, you know, like one of you ladies said, you know, being the professional, you know, you're a professional when it comes to your kids, and I would not give up. And so that's what I would like to encourage any other parents, you know, just don't give up on, you know, going to the doctor, you know, even for a diagnosis. You know, I didn't want my son to get overlooked or pushed through the system. So it was a battle. You know, we tried some medications. He is not on any medication right now, doing very well, on a roll in school. But there were a lot of adjustments. And I'm grateful for the teachers who, like the two of you ladies, who you have a heart for, you know, education. And one thing is my kids, they know this by heart. And I said this to them, your education, that you can be responsible for your education. At 16 years old, I'm not sure if this is, you know, throughout the country, but at 16, the children can sit in on their own IEP meetings. And that is very important for them to know what is going on, even in those meetings, and for them to have a voice. And, you know, I've taught them to be an advocate for themselves. If you don't understand, raise your hand, ask the teacher, staff, the school, let me know. We can communicate. But really just to take charge of their education, because this prepares them for college as well when I'm not around, when, you know, I'm not going to email the teacher. When you know what I'm saying? Just for them to be able to go off to college. And then this goes into their workplace as well, to speak up for themselves, to ask for help. This experience has been a lot for us. We have four kids, but again, two of them have learning disabilities, but it has been a blessing at the same time, because we have definitely come across awesome teachers like the two of you ladies who have helped make, you know, this journey much easier, and really well worth it. You know, it's not as big of a headache as it started off to be, but when we found teachers that loved them, and the staff, and, you know, everyone who we found, that everyone was on our side, but we had to be very active. We had to show up at the school. We had to show up at the IEP meetings. You know what I'm saying? We had to show up at back-to-school night. We, you know, emailing and phone calls and everything. Like, I'm all in the mix. I'm that mama. You know, I'm all in there. And they know us when we come to the school. That is very important, because being silent, being a silent parent and not saying anything, you're kind of accepting what comes out of that. And your child is worth so much more than that. Especially our children, you know, in our community, really. So, again, the two ladies that were on here, thank you. The information was amazing. I was sitting on here saying, amen, that's right. Y'all, I was getting all that. You know, I'm glad I was on mute, because I was all in into here. But thank you. And Kenny and Quazin, this is an excellent. I'll send the link to a couple of friends who need to hear this replay. This is an excellent episode tonight.
And I thank you for being an advocate for your children. That's amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah, it makes a difference. Well, ladies, we thank you so much. I will definitely be texting you all in like 5 minutes so we can schedule another show for part two. Thank you all. Yes, it's been great. I love it. So thank you guys. And you all have a wonderful night. But like I said, you guys will hear from me in just a few minutes. But everyone else, have a wonderful night. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Talk to y'all later.
Thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Enjoy your night.
Good night.